morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show whenever you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking with author Robin Rahm about her new memoir called The Mercy Papers, a memoir of 3 weeks. Right now, I would like to welcome Sir Kenneth Knight. He's not really a Sir Kenneth Knight, but we think of him as Sir Kenneth Knight. He's a conductor, artistic director of the Santa Fe Men's Camerata, the Zia Singers, and Canticum Novum Chamber Orchestra and Chorus. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's good to see you.
Great to see you, too. We do this something like this almost pretty much annually, and this is the 10th anniversary concert of the Santa Fe Men's Camerata.
That's right. That's right. We've been around for 10 years.
Tell us about the three groups that you conduct.
The Men's Camerata is, as the name suggests, a men's chorus, and it's a community chorus. The Zia Singers is a women's chorus. That's also a community chorus. And the Canticum Novum Chamber Orchestra and Chorus is a professional group of men and women.
So what's the difference between community and professional?
The community choruses are pretty much a y'all come kind of a chorus. If you can carry a tune and your voice doesn't sound like Harvey Fierstein, why, you're in.
Oh, so that's how Robert Knott got accepted, just through his radio audition.
That's right. Reading music is an asset, but is not a requirement for the community choirs. And we most of the members learn by rote, by repetition, with a lot of help from me. I make everybody demo CDs with their voice part on it. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah. Now, we have a terrific time. We really have fun.
And so, presumably, they are volunteers.
They are volunteers. Uh-huh. The men's chorus was founded by a local fellow here, he's semi-retired professional photographer from Washington, D.C., named Jim Klebau. He sang with the Men's Camerata of Washington, and when he moved to Santa Fe in 1995, he missed the men's chorus in Washington so much that he just decided to form his own men's group. So he went out and recruited some singers, and they hired a conductor, and off they went. And it's now been 10 years. And
how long have you been doing it?
I've been doing it since the spring of 2002. So what is that? Almost seven years. They went through several conductors in a hurry, and then I came along, and I've stuck.
And the Zia Singers is having their concert on not this weekend, but next weekend, the 24th
right.
and 25th at Loretto Chapel, Saturday and Sunday nights.
Right.
And the Santa Fe Men's Camerata is this weekend, Saturday, January 17th and 18th, at the Scottish Rite Center, it's now called, rather than
Center.
A temple.
There, they've opened it up to lots and lots of public events, which they didn't used to do, but it's become extremely popular to rent the Scottish Rite Center for lectures, concerts, weddings, wedding receptions, benefits. The Santa Fe Opera rents it for a whole month and a half in May and June. For their one-hour opera and their children's operas.
That's right.
It's a beautiful, beautiful place. It was built in 1911, and it's hard to find a three-hole plug, electrical plug, in the building.
Goodness.
This is way before building codes. And we have to run extension cords all over the place to light ourselves, but it's just the most charming building you've ever seen.
And for those who don't know, here in Santa Fe, it is a very large pink, it's basically...
Do you know the story of why it's pink?
Would you call it church or temple? I mean, Masonic temple.
It's a Masonic temple.
No, why is it pink?
Originally, when it was built, it was a nice adobe terracotta color and matched the roof tiles very nicely.
But their daughter had a ballerina tutu, and she chose the pink.
No. Around about the 1930s, they decided it needed a little facelift, a little cosmetic work, so they decided to paint it. And the color came out much, much pinker than they had wanted. And the man who was in charge of the project, who was a member of the temple, was just horrified. And he said, this won't do. I will pay out of my own pocket to have this redone. And he left the meeting that they were having at the Scottish Rite Temple, walked out onto the front steps of the temple, had a heart attack, and died
right
there. And nobody stepped up to the plate to take over the project.
That's a very strong reaction to paint color.
Isn't it? And along about the late 50s, they decided they would then restore it to the original color. And the historical preservation folks said, no, you can't do that. It's always been pink. It's traditional. It must remain pink.
Right.
So
that's such a Santa Fe story.
They've preserved the mistake, and it is now part of our lore.
And so that's where the Men's Camerata Gala 10th Anniversary Concert is happening this coming weekend.
That's right.
So is it all a cappella music?
No, it's about half and half. Well, actually, we're maybe 60-40 a cappella, and the rest accompanied. We have a wonderful pianist named Bill Epstein who's playing concerts for us. But the Men's Camerata is the singers in the Camerata represent a wide spectrum of experience, aptitude, training. We've got a guy who used to sing in the chorus of the Metropolitan Opera and even did some Compromario roles on stage at the Met. And we've got guys who've never sung anywhere except in the shower and only when their wives are out of the house. And everything in between. We've got guys who can just pick up anything and sight read it right off the page, and guys who can't read a note of music and learn everything by listening. And we've got singers of all ages. We've had a number of high school students who've sung with us, and we've got guys up into their 80s and everything in between. I think we're unique in the history of choral music in that at one time we had three father and son pairs in the Camerata.
So this is something I was going to ask you, because it seems like it's kind of an older group. How do you keep the younger generation interested and keep the tradition going?
We just recruit from our younger friends as much as we can. The two sons, the two high school students who were sons of two of the other singers in the group, are now off at college. One is singing in the choir at University of Pennsylvania. The other is singing opera at Harvard. And the third son is a middle-aged guy. Oops, did I say middle-aged? Sorry. He's a local real estate agent. And
Over 30, under 90.
That's right. That's right, exactly. Who was it? Was it Jackie Gleason who said, you can only call 45 middle-aged if you expect to live to be 90? But we also had a college student, or two or three years, who has just gone to Scotland to study voice at one of the Royal Conservatories in the United Kingdom. So we've had some younger people, always glad to get them, but there, as you look at the photograph of our group, you can see it appears to be a sea of gray hair.
So I was just talking to my friend Lynn Klein, who sang for years with the Santa Fe Symphony, and she was saying how difficult it was to sing a cappella music because you always end up flatter than where you started.
It's a strange thing. Singers, I believe, hear themselves inaccurately. They hear the pitch that they themselves are singing inaccurately. It sounds higher inside our own heads than it sounds out in the room. I think the reason for that is that our voices are so close to our own ears that we get a lot of high overtones, extra harmonics in the sound that have the effect of making the pitch seem higher. It gives us a brighter sound inside our own heads. It makes the pitch feel higher to us. And so what sounds right to us is actually flat. And unfortunately, the flatness is cumulative. And
it just keeps going during, if you're singing a long song, you might end up how many half steps lower than where you started?
At least one. And I've sung with groups that in a long song could end up two half steps flat. But
what kind of training can you do with singers to prevent that?
You just have to train everybody to sing on the uncomfortably high side of the pitch. If the pitch doesn't sound like it's in danger of going sharp, then it's going to be flat. And some singers are skilled enough to be able to do that. They just get used to always singing on the high side. And in fact, if I've trained myself to do that because I was a section leader in a church choir for years and years and years, and it was my job to help keep people on pitch as well as to teach them the music. But I just got in the habit of always singing on the high side of the pitch. And when I sing by myself, a cappella, at home when I'm practicing, I will, over, say, a 64-bar passage, I'll end up a half step sharp.
Oh, really? Because you're overcompensating.
I'm overcompensating, and I just keep nudging it northward all the damn time, and it ends up sharp.
So what is the nature of a cappella music, besides the fact that you have to sing on tune and it's hard? Do you always have very tight, close, multi-part harmonies? I mean, what is the...
Well, there's a wide variety of styles that a cappella music comes in. The most common configuration is just simple four-part soprano, alto, tenor, bass. In men's choral music, it's tenor one, tenor two, baritone, bass, and because we don't have women and we don't normally sail up into that higher octave or two octaves, the harmony tends to be closer, the notes are closer together, and it's
right.
A very rich sonority. In women's a cappella singing, of course, we don't have the lower octaves or two that the men can reach, and so everything also tends to be closer harmony.
So you have soprano,
soprano
high
one,
and low,
soprano two, alto one, alto two.
Right. And you have those occasional women who can actually sing tenor parts.
There are. They sound like heavy smokers most of the time, but I'm glad to have some of them in my men's women's chorus.
And so, basically, you've got four-part harmony, not five or six.
Sometimes you can get six-part harmony. In double chorus pieces, of course, then you have eight-part harmony.
Right.
So there's a wide variety of different components.
Why don't we play a song and give people an example of what the heck we're talking about?
Okay, this first selection is a spiritual, New River Train. And this is an example of an accompanied, an accompanied spiritual that's only in two parts. Occasionally there are three, and I think maybe the last card there are four. But it's a quite simple but very effective arrangement of just two-part sort of conversational harmony.
Let's hear it.
I'm riding that new river train.
Train Santa Fe Men's Camerata. We're talking to Kenneth Knight, conductor and artistic director. And so we've got New River Train and the song we're going to play a little later, Ride the Chariot. So a lot of transportation vehicles.
Yeah, you'd think we were a marketing arm of the Department of Transportation in New Mexico.
But I guess that's a metaphor in a lot of spirituals.
It is, exactly. You ask about the different kinds of a cappella music. I conducted a piece in a concert last year that used all three of my choirs. It was a 12-part piece by Gabrielli, a Renaissance composer, that had a four-part women's chorus, four-part mixed chorus, and four-part men's chorus. And we did it at the Scottish Rite Center in surround sound. I had the women in the balcony on stage right, the men in the balcony on stage left, and the Canticum Novum choir in the center.
Oh, my goodness.
In center stage. And it was a thrilling experience, a thrilling experience.
Most of all, I suppose, for the audience.
Well, yes, I'd like to think so, but it was kind of an aerobic exercise for me. I kept having to whirl around and conduct in this direction and then turn and conduct in that direction.
Right.
And the lighting was not great at that time, and I conducted in white gloves so that the choirs could see my hands moving. But we had a great time doing it.
So your path in life conducting this type of music was set in college.
Well, actually, it was set the year before college. I auditioned and was accepted into the Texas All-State High School Choir, a tiny group of 256 singers.
Are you from Texas?
Yes. Believe it or not, I grew up in Uvalde, Texas, west of San Antonio.
One doesn't hear it in your voice.
Well, you know, people in Uvalde used to say the same thing to me. They would say, "How come you don't have a Texas accent?" I didn't have any explanation for it. I guess watching television, I copied the broadcasters. See the pernicious influence you people have on us?
It's broadcasters' fault.
That's right.
No, it's a good thing.
My brother was the same way. He doesn't have a Texas accent. Our parents did.
Interesting.
We never noticed it, but when I hear them speak on an old reel-to-reel tape, I can clearly hear it.
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with identification, whom you identify with. If you identify locally, you're more likely to have a local accent.
Right.
But you were in this choir.
I got into the Texas All-State Choir, and it was the most thrilling experience of my young life. When the conductor gave the downbeat for the first song at the first rehearsal, I was literally struck dumb. My mouth fell open, and I just froze. I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. I was just washed away with this incredibly glorious choral sound of 256 voices selected by competitive audition across the whole state of Texas. It was a Brahms Liebeslieder waltz. I remember it like it was yesterday. And it was that experience of singing with that group over that weekend at the Statler Hilton Hotel in Dallas, Texas, that planted the seed in my mind that I might like to do this for a living.
For the rest of your life.
Someday. And I went to college and fell in with the most wonderful choirs, made up of the most wonderful singers, and conducted by the most wonderful conductor I think that I've ever met to this day. Unfortunately, my mentor and role model, Fenno Heath, the director of the Yale Glee Club for 38 years, passed away just last month at the age of 82. But
and a great loss to you and so many people who sang under him.
Decades of singers just thought he walked on water.
What is it like to have a mentor like that? What is it that he gives that's so special to so many people?
I've often thought back about what made Fenno so special. It wasn't just his talent. It wasn't just his warm personality. It wasn't just the skill that he had in working with people, working with temperamental singers. It wasn't just his ear. It wasn't just his understanding, intuitive understanding of the music and his ability to get to the heart of the music. I never, ever saw him lose his temper, no matter how frustrated he got or how many times we made the same dumb mistake over and over. He never, ever lost his temper. You know, that you've seen ultra-religious kids who wear the little bracelet that say, WWJD, what would Jesus do? For me, it's always, what would Fenno do?
Isn't that amazing?
In a case like, when I'm rehearsing a choir, I just try to think, what would Fenno do? He'd just stop and say, it's not together, let's do it again.
Now, is there a temptation to get mad at your singers?
Oh, yeah, I'm guilty sometimes of getting a little short-tempered when they make the same dumb mistake 6 or 7 times in a row that I've already corrected 6 or 7 times.
And what's going on with that? It's just they get lazy or tired or distracted, or what's going on when they don't follow your instructions?
All of those things, but, you know, I'm sorry to say it's also a function of number of birthdays. College kids learn...
Number of birthdays, okay.
College kids learn so fast. You know, 18, 19-year-olds, my gosh, it's just unbelievable how rapidly they can learn a piece of music and how quickly they can assimilate suggestions, corrections, refinements,
really?
All that sort of thing, yeah.
So
as we get older,
we get more rigid.
As we get older, we just don't retain things as well as we used to. Yeah. So it takes a lot more repetition to teach an adult choir or a senior choir.
So you conduct the Mens Camerata, and that is that concert is this weekend, January 17th and 18th. And it's a program of really mixed all sorts of things, popular songs, classical, spiritual.
It's the greatest hits from our first 10 years.
Greatest hits from
the
your first 10
years. The way I chose the program is I did a poll of all the singers, and I said, send me a list of your favorite 10 songs that you've sung since you joined the group. And I collected the lists, and I picked the songs that got the greatest number of votes. And there were some surprises to me. The song that got the most number of votes is the last one on the program here. It's a spiritual called We Shall Walk Through the Valley in Peace. It's very simple. But it just touches people in a very profound way.
Now, these are black spirituals, mm-hmm. by definition. When white people sing black spirituals, they get, I think we've talked about this a little bit, they get kind of white. What's going on? they you just lose the syncopation or the swing of the music?
That's
or?
Part of it, but, you know, choral singers are so score-bound. They like to stare at their music. And it's a constant struggle for me, and I think all conductors, to get them up and out of the music, to present the music.
Do you ever make them put their music on the ground?
Well, we're doing a whole bunch of these songs on this program from memory.
Yeah.
So that they'll have to look up and have to look out at the audience.
Right.
And it's a difference between presenting and actually communicating a song and a text and the ideas in the text to someone directly versus reading it off a document. I mean, imagine if you went to see a play and the actors came out on stage carrying their scripts and read their lines from a script. You wouldn't feel like you'd been to a performance.
Well, and it's interesting because sometimes you go to staged readings and that's the way they are.
Exactly.
But it's a very different thing. You don't. It's not this.
Completely.
Unless
different.
You close your eyes and think it's radio, it's not the same suspension of disbelief.
In fact, if people are staring at their books, the audience might as well be hearing the music on the radio. There's
exactly.
nothing to look at. It looks like the singers are over there across the room kind of involved in a personal meditation, and the audience is not sure they're supposed to be eavesdropping on this, you know.
There's always, just by definition, a Cole Porter song in there.
Well, there are two on this one.
Uh-huh.
Yes, Cole Porter's a special favorite of mine and some of the other singers in the group.
Now, going back to Yale for a moment, which was your alma mater and where, after Texas, this all really got going for mm-hmm. you, both with Fenno Heath and your being in the Glee Club and your being in a group called the Whiffen Poofs. Tell us about the Whiffen Poofs. They're about to have their 100th anniversary.
The Whiffen Poofs are celebrating their 100th anniversary this year. They were founded in 1909 they were a quintet originally, just 5 guys. Over the years, they expanded, and they're now, they've been 14 in number for, 40 years probably, but just a bunch of guys like to get together, and they got together at a particular place in New Haven, a bar called Maury's, run by a guy named Louis Linder, and the Whiffen Poof song says, to the tables down at Maury's, to the place where Louis dwells, to the dear old temple bar we love so well. So it's a group it's a kind of honorary group made up only of seniors that are chosen by informal auditions from the junior class by the outgoing Whiffen Poofs. And they're chosen from the other a cappella singing groups at Yale, of which there are, gosh, at least a score now.
And so they are the creme de la creme, and they sound good, and they sing the same. I mean, I'm sure they add a song now and then, but...
Lots of songs. They keep adding to their repertoire.
Do they? But they still play the classics. They still sing the classics.
They still do the old favorites. They do. And it's because it's all seniors, of course, it's a different group every year. Some years they are just phenomenally fantastic, and other years they're only moderately fantastic. But
you've been going to these reunions and singing with your old Whiff and Poop buddies for decades.
My group was the class of 1969, and we, of course, all Yale classes have a reunion every 5 years, and so the Whiff and Poofs of every class get together at least once every 5 years. My group was especially close, and we like each other so much, and we've kept in such close touch that we get together at least once in between the five-year class reunions. Every 2 or 3 years. We've actually had a reunion in Santa Fe about 7 or 8, I don't know, it was a while back, and we gave 3 concerts while they were here.
Not a bad place to have a reunion if people have to come from far and wide, as they do anyway. The Santa Fe Men's Camerata Gala 10th Anniversary Concert is this Saturday, January 17th at 7 o'clock, and Sunday, January 18th at 3 o'clock. And then the Zia Singers annual concert, I guess?
It's a semi-annual.
Semi-annual concert is the 24th and 25th of January, the following weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Saturday at 8 o'clock, Sunday at 7 o'clock at the Loretto Chapel. Sir Kenneth Knightley, is the conductor and artistic director of those two groups, as well as the Canticum Novum Chamber Orchestra and Chorus. As always, Ken, it's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you, Lady Mary Charlotte.
And we're going to go out with Ride the Chariot.
Yes, the soloist on this recording is Tim Wilson, the fellow who I mentioned who sang with the Metropolitan Opera Chorus for many years.
Okay, let's hear it, and thanks again for coming.
You bet.
I'm gonna...